Hello, members. I call the meeting of the House Education Policy Committee to order. If members could please take your seats. Representative Sandell, have you had a chance to look at the minutes from February 28th?
I have, Madam Chair, and I move to adopt the minutes.
Representative Sandell moves approval of the minutes for Friday, February 28th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for Friday, February 28th are approved. Members, we have a rather full agenda today. We're going to try to keep things moving around, but we have a Representative Freiberg here for House File 2968. Representative Freiberg, welcome to the Education Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sandell, would you like to move House File 2968 to be placed on the General Registry?
I would still move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. House File 2968 is before the committee. Representative Freiberg, please present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have some prepared remarks, but it occurred to me that this is actually a really timely bill, considering today is our presidential primary, and we've been hearing about people who cast their ballots early for candidates who are no longer in the race. And it seems like kind of an analogous situation, actually. When things like that happen to the election calendar, sometimes it becomes necessary to make some changes, and that's what this bill does. All it does is extend the time period that the required notice of a school operating referendum can be sent to taxpayers. Now, under current law, the notice cannot be sent more than 30 days prior to election day, but more and more people are choosing to vote early. Many of them are casting their ballot before they receive the required notice. With the information about the referendum question. So this bill would allow school districts to send the required notice out up to 45 days prior to election day to coincide with the start of early voting. I'm not aware of any opposition to the bill. The language was included in the omnibus state government finance bill last session and was included in the Senate omnibus education finance bill, but unfortunately not included in the final agreement. So I would be very happy to have the support from your committee. And have some testifiers here as well.
Representative Freiberg, why don't you have your testifiers introduce themselves and state their names, and state your name for the record, who you're with, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Grunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And thank you for the opportunity to say a few words, and thank you, Representative Freiberg, for carrying this bill forward. There's not a lot to add. Representative Freiberg did a great job explaining the bill. It really simply better aligns the timeline when we can send out those required, and by the way, those notices are required by state law that we send those notices out to all the taxpayers. But increasingly, voters are casting their ballot before they actually get those notices because of that timeline. And so this would simply adjust it and make sure voters are informed before they cast their ballot. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Kim Lewis. I'm with Minnesota School Boards Association, and I just want to echo on everything that Mr. Grunquist has said and Representative Freiberg, and we really do appreciate him bringing forth this bill. From a school board perspective, obviously referendums are very, very important to us, and the more opportunity we have to communicate with the community members, the better it is for our school boards and the opportunity to pass this referendum and put the dollars back in the classroom. As someone who's worked on a number of referendum committees, I really want to say that this would be a tremendous opportunity to further communicate with folks earlier and be able to understand where their votes are at and help them along the way to make sure that we have those referendums in the districts.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Representative Freiberg, do you have anything to add before we go to member questions?
Nope.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So this is for AMSD or MSBA. Is it because these letters do not go out first class that there might be a time lapse at the post office for delivery? Is that why there's more urgent need for this increase?
Mr. Grunquist.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, no, it's really more because of that timeline. In law right now, they cannot be sent out more than 30 days before general election day, and early voting starts before that. And so this would back it up to 45 days before election day, which, again, would better align with when the people actually start to vote.
Representative Erickson, follow.
Thank you. So to either of you, do we have early voting for school referenda throughout the state?
Mr. Grunquist.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, The school district referendum election follows the regular election law.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, just to clarify the language, it's not early voting, it's absentee voting with no excuse absentee voting. So, okay. And that's a change we made a few
years
ago.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it certainly makes sense to me that you want to get the notice before you start voting of the election. But, I'm just wondering, in 2018, Governor Dayton vetoed this provision, and I'm sure he didn't ever do anything without having a really good reason. So I was wondering if you could explain to me what reason he might have given.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl. I don't believe it was in a bill during the Dayton administration. It was in competing omnibus bills last year under Governor Walz. So it was in the Senate Education Omnibus Bill and the House State Government Finance Omnibus Bill, and they didn't quite match up and just didn't become part of the final agreement. I don't believe it was part of the omnibus prime type bills that we had in 2017 or 18, but I could be mistaken.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Well, the information I have says that this change was included in the 2018 omnibus bill that was vetoed by the governor, so maybe it was for other reasons that he vetoed the bill.
Representative Freiberg.
I know there were lots. Yeah, there was. I think that was a 1,000-page omnibus bill. If it was included in there, I apologize if my memory is not faulty, but that bill was vetoed for much larger reasons than this provision, so more macro-level stuff and not referendum notice.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Freiberg. I mean, that's understandable. I just wondered if maybe he had, because sometimes they do cite specific reasons, and obviously this was not included in that. I mean, one time even vetoed a bill called the Cheeseburger Bill.
Who was the author?
All right. Representative Freiberg, final. Is there any testimony from the audience? Seeing no more member questions or testimony, Representative Freiberg, final word.
It's a good bill. I'd love to have your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sandel renews the motion that House File 2968 be recommended for placement on the general registry. All those in favor for the motion say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 2968 is recommended for placement on the general registry. Members, I am going to switch places here with Vice Chair Kunesh-Podein.
So, members, we have House File 3455 up for consideration today. Chair Joachim, would you like to move your bill, please?
Thank you, members. I move House File 3455 to be placed on the general registry.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. Members, the author has an amendment to get the bill in shape that she would like to discuss it. Chair Joachim, would you like to move your author's amendment, please?
Yes. Members, I would like to move House Amendment A2. First, members, I just want to say House File 3455 before the committee is a bill that just reorganizes the sections of statutes related to state assessments, so it's broken apart and easier to read. The A2 amendment includes five sections from the governor's policy bill that were in Article 4 that are purely technical changes, so I figured it'd be a good idea to include them here. Most of them eliminate obsolete languages or update incorrect references. If members want us to walk through the A2 amendment first before we vote, I have Mr. Dosh here from the Minnesota Department of Education, or Mr. Uni, sorry, here from the Minnesota Department of Education to walk through the specific provisions. Depends on what the members would like to do.
Are there members that would like to that walk through, or are you comfortable with it as it is?
And Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A2 amendment.
Perfect. So Chair Joachim has moved the A2 amendment. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. House File 3455 is before the committee. Chair Joachim, please present your bill.
Thank you, members. I think I'll have Mr. Uni quickly just walk through the sections we just amended just so folks know what they do.
Please identify yourself, and you may speak to this bill.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Adosh Uni, Government Relations with the Department of Education. Thank you, Chair Joachim, for the opportunity to present on our technical amendments from the Governor and Lieutenant Governor's technical policy portions of our policy bill. So if you look at Section 1, this is eliminating a non-existent competency exam for individuals teaching non-public students. So Minnesota hasn't had this exam, and so having this option or requirement can cause a bit of confusion for those seeking to teach students in the non-public setting, so that's non-public schools or in homeschooling. And so the basic skills test that we normally have heard about for a requirement for Tier 4 licenses currently is one that exists in the tiered licensure section. So it's not the same as this competency exam. And so this competency exam wouldn't be the same. And we've actually heard from superintendents and those seeking to teach in non-public schools who lack bachelor's degrees that they would like this removed from statute as it creates some confusion. On Section 2, this eliminates obsolete language regarding the Minnesota Early Learning Foundation scholarship program pilot sites. So in 2013, when the legislature made the Early Learning Scholarship Program an ongoing program, the legislation included a carve-out for the pilot sites, which had existed from prior legislation, because only 44 of the 87 counties in the state were eligible to participate in Parent Aware, or Quality Rating and Improvement System. So this made it so that some of the pilot sites that were in those counties that didn't have that Parent Aware rating system going, they would have been left out of the program. Then they wouldn't have been able to receive scholarships and serve those students, so they would have had to cut off service that they had been giving before. By 2016, the funding had expanded to everywhere in the state. So all 87 counties were able to allow eligible participants to pursue Parent Aware ratings. And at that point, the carve-out for these pilot sites became unnecessary because they were already all eligible. They already pursued Parent Aware ratings, so the carving was unnecessary. And so the language is obsolete at this point. On Section 3, this is correcting an internal reference in the Achievement and Integration Revenue Statute. So this is a purely technical fix. It's an incorrect statutory reference. 124D.62, Subdivision 7, which guides how revenue is spent in the Achievement Integration Programs, references Subdivision 2 of the same statute. But that Subdivision 2 of that same statute spells out a different bucket of money, not what a plan components or usable or what uses, allowable uses could be. Those allowable uses are actually located in 124D.81, Subdivision 2. Sorry, let me make sure I have that that reference correct. Sorry, 124D.861, sub 2. So it's in the prior section. That refers to components and programs that are in an achievement integration plan. So that's been the correct reference, and this would merely update that reference from 8.62 to 8.61. In Section 4, we're correcting a reference name for the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled. For the Library of Congress. So the Minnesota Braille and Talking Book Library provides library services with for those with print disabilities. And they work with the Library National Library Service for Blind and what it used to be called Physically Handicapped, which administers a free national library for those with print disabilities. So effective last October, the NLS officially changed their name, ending with print disabled. So we're just updating our statutes to align with what the new federal program is. And then finally, Section 5, this removes MDE from receiving expungements around teacher licensure. So before 2017, MDE shared licensing responsibilities, what was then known as the Board of Teaching. 2017, the legislature created the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board, which moved all licensing responsibilities under one body and outside of MDE. However, the statute that's referenced here in the bill, 609A.03, still references MDE's licensing division as being a responsible entity for receiving expungement orders. So since this division doesn't exist anymore and MDE no longer has any authority to act on licenses, the statute needs to be updated. And I would note to comply with the law, since it already existed, MDE reassigned the maltreatment division to review expungement orders until the statute is corrected. While they received orders, since there's no authority to take action, they did not take any action, but they did assure that Pelsby was receiving any expungement orders, even though the applicant has to apply to Pelsby anyway.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that that explanation. Is there anyone in the audience that would like to testify to this bill? Seeing none, members, questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Uni, when the reviser determined that we should reorganize, which I always think is a really good idea, do you know, was the department directly involved, or did the reviser discover that we had this conglomeration and therefore to proceed with this action?
Mr. Uni?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Erickson, just to clarify, when you're talking about interaction with the reviser, you're talking about just identifying these as technical fixes and obsolete language that need to be fixed?
Madam Chair, yes.
Oh, you're...
Or the reorganization, Representative Erickson?
I'm referring not to the amendment, but to the original bill and the reviser instruction to reorder these sections of 120B, and I don't know, does it...
Representative Erickson, I do believe that Ms. Para from House Research can answer that question.
That would be perfect. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, over the interim, the department consulted with their reviser on this bill, and the reviser worked with both House and Senate nonpartisan staff, as well as the department, to put this together to identify how the subdivisions should be reorganized.
So, Madam Representative Chair. Representative Erickson.
We're involved, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, that's
good. I'm very pleased. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? All right. Chair Joachim, any closing thoughts?
I was just going to say thank you, members. As I said in my opening, this is a technical bill that reorganizing sections of statutes, which we should be doing, eliminates obsolete language and updates incorrect references, and I would like your support.
Thank you. Chair Joachim renews the motion that House File 3455 as amended be placed on the General Register. Is there any further discussion on that motion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. House File 3455 as amended is recommended for placement on the General Register.
Thank you, members. We actually have a presentation today from the State Assessor, Jennifer Dugan, Director of Research and Assessment Division with the Department of Education. I thought we'd lay some groundwork on where we are on assessments, where we've been, and where we're going, just so that we can start out this conversation and kind of lay the table for next year. And Ms. Dugan, could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you. Jennifer Dugan, Minnesota Department of Education Director for the Division of Statewide Student Assessment and Data Analytics. Today you are going to hear and discuss a number of bills aimed at changing and or improving Minnesota's existing K-12 public education assessment process. Before these important conversations take place, I'd like to offer you a brief overview of the goals, processes, and achievements of the Minnesota Department of Education's Statewide Assessment and Data Analytics Division. Statewide assessment begins with you, our legislators. You pass into law the revision schedule for Minnesota academic standards, guiding everyone involved in K-12 education across the state in the goal to provide Minnesota students a world-class education. This promise is put into rule with the Minnesota academic standards. We in statewide student assessment are then tasked with assessing implementation of our state's dedication that Minnesota educational standards are taught to every student in every classroom. Minnesota statewide student assessment's role is to develop and administer assessments that determine how our schools are doing instructing students on the full depth and breadth of the academic standards. The data we collect from standardized tests help us ensure that Minnesota's education system is implementing those academic standards using best practices and effective teaching tools for all students. How do we at MDE ensure that our students engage with state standards and meet their learning objectives? Our process begins with Minnesota standards and the most important people involved in K-12 education, the classroom educators. Therefore, our test development process is a partnership with trained Minnesota teachers. These professionals are involved in our test development cycle because they know the content that is grade appropriate and consistent with the instructional approaches for the standards and benchmarks. Assessment development also includes public comment periods, feedback sessions and satisfaction surveys, implementation of that feedback, and reviews of test content from committees of community experts. Throughout the assessment development process, MDE ensures the adherence to federal and state regulations and industry standards and best practices. The handout I've shared with you provides the broad categories for the federal and state regulations. The Legislative Auditor's Office released a program evaluation of standardized student assessment in March 2017 that states, the Minnesota Department of Education conveys stakeholder groups that are closely involved with developing the MCAs, and that report describes the process in greater detail. This test development and construction process ensures that Minnesota students are taking the tests that are standardized, that the tests align with the intended educational standards taught in our classrooms, and that our test results can be compared from one year to the next. Furthermore, the implementation of our MDE-developed assessments reflects Minnesota's promise of accessibility for all students, offering testing accommodations and meeting diverse accessibility needs. Our MDE-developed tests also put districts in the driver's seat when it comes to accommodating the multitudinous schedule variations from one school to the next. It is our school districts that choose the exact testing times, dates, and locations within one of the largest testing windows in the country, which did open yesterday. It is the districts who determine whether a student's knowledge is best demonstrated by taking the test on a tablet, a computer, or paper. Because it is the districts who are essential to facilitating MDE's goal of equity for all students. MDE's goal is to accurately reflect student achievement with regard to Minnesota educational standards and allow districts the flexibility to meet students' needs. This means Minnesota-developed tests reflect what is being taught rather than determining how it is being taught. No one in Minnesota should be teaching to a test. All large-scale assessments are like the Minnesota-developed assessments in that no test reveals the whole of a student's educational experience, engagement, or expertise. Standardized tests are not an all-encompassing way of determining a school or a student's success, but it does allow a necessary tool to measure student learning and report educational achievement. We live in a data-hungry world, and we are all anxious to ensure that every student in every Minnesota classroom is receiving the excellent education promised them. However, we must always remember that our students have full lives that play a role in them reaching their full potential in their K-12 education. Our students have far more going on than any standardized assessment could encompass. MDE makes visible only one portion of student achievement, and we do take that seriously and ensure that that one snapshot must therefore be accurate as accurate as possible so that our impact can be as effective as possible. This is why our test development and implementation is Minnesota-centric, focused on meeting our legislature's expectations with Minnesota academic standards, as well as encompassing the federal testing standards. Finally, a very brisk walk down memory lane. Per state legislative action, the first Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments, or MCAs, were administered during the 1997-98 school year in grades 3 and 5, see, I did it. It's just 3 and 5 in 1997 for math and reading, which is only a small subset of the current requirement.
That was all cut-pasted.
With the federal authorization of No Child Left Behind in 2001, MDE began developing the second generation of the math and reading MCAs. They became operational in 2006 in grades 3 through 8 and high school. Our efforts were to align state expectations with federal requirements. While the overwhelming majority of students are most appropriately assessed on the MCA, Minnesota provides an alternate assessment for students with the most significant cognitive challenges. That test is the Minnesota Test of Academic Skills, and it was first administered in 2006, 2007 in math and reading. The science MCAs and MTAS became operational in 2007, 2008. As the MCA2s were being developed, there were many sessions discussing the lack of student motivation on the high school assessments. The graduation required assessment for diploma or grad was phased in. 2006-07 for writing, 2007-08 for reading, and 2008-09 for math. Minnesota's academic standards revision cycle began in 2006-07 with math. MDE developed the third generation of assessments aligned to those standards. The first MCA3 was implemented in 2011, and the last grad test was administered in 2014. The development and planning for MCA4 is underway because the science standards were revised last school year, and English language arts standards are currently under revision this school year. Over the course of the past 25 years, MDE's assessment and development process has evolved. Educator and community input is essential, and we have worked to expand it. The MCAs have transitioned from paper to online. The math and reading MCAs have become adaptive, providing a customized assessment for each student. Accommodations and usability features have increased dramatically and are critical guides during every part of our development and administration conversation. Student statewide assessment and data analytics staff have consistently engaged with districts to learn how users understand and utilize the reports we provide. Through this district-centric engagement, we have come to consistently develop reports that reflect the needs of district staff. We call this responsive reporting and hold it as a key tenet of MDE's responsible reporting practices. Our own Minnesota State Colleges and Universities recognize the excellence of the MCA as they began accepting MCAs in 2016-17 as one of the measures to determine course placement, and thus allowing Minnesota high school graduates another option as they transition into our higher education system. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dugan. I think, members, we have a few minutes for questions. I'm from Ms. Dugan while we have her here. Does anybody have any questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may not be exactly related, but Ms. Dugan, I know the testing window has opened as of yesterday. Do you know if there are any districts that begin testing in reading this early?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. I am not certain that they started reading this year. The typical pattern is that they do test reading first and then move to math and then move to science if the pattern of history repeats itself. And we had, I believe, at around 1 o'clock yesterday, we had over 200 tests were completed.
Representative Erickson, follow up?
No, I just said, well, Madam Chair. I mean, that's, Madam Chair, that's so early, and I know we've tried over the years to encourage MDE to encourage districts to, you know, make it closer to April so that children have longer to learn the benchmarks, but so it is. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Mahler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you keep track of how many students opt out of the MCAs?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. Yes, we do. That is posted publicly on our data center, and it's also, in addition to the spreadsheet, is also available. The participation rates are available in the MDE report card.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Kunesh-Padin.
Thank you. Just a quick question. Has there been any plan in action should we have some kind of a virus outbreak and the students miss that window, or there's just so many kids that are missing, the makeup period is more complicated than manageable? So has there been any plan for that?
Ms. Dugan, with cold and flu season here, I think we've had some kiddos missing for influenza B. So what is the process and procedure for that?
Generally speaking, the window is typically large enough to accommodate that circumstance. We work very closely with the districts to monitor what is going on, and we are working actively with our testing partners and the folks that are administering the test to prepare for shifts in test-taking patterns in comparison to previous years due to unforeseen circumstances.
Thank you. I see you've been joined by a friend. So, Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Commissioner Pena, I think Ms. Dugan answered the question around testing specifically, but I think just to let the committee know that MDE and MDH are working hand in hand, with MDH taking the lead for overall preparedness for schools. We've been in communication with superintendents and other school officials, and we're in the process of developing more detailed guidance of how we're being prepared. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to let the committee know that even outside of testing, there are efforts ongoing, and there are plans to forthcoming for providing more detailed information to the legislature.
Thank you. Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dugan, where do the tests come from? Are they written by Minnesota teachers? Are they written in at the Department of Education, or do you buy them from a national firm, or do you hire consultants?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. So all of the science test questions originate in Minnesota. We have science teachers that come together and start that development process, and then a different group of Minnesota educators come in and review those questions before students ever see them on a test. For math and reading, due to the volume of the questions, we do hire independent contractors to write the test questions, and then Minnesota Department of Education staff are reviewing the questions, and then they are editing them before the Minnesota educators come in and see them before, and community members also see them. So the Minnesota educators and community members are reviewing the test questions before it's ever administered on a test for practice and testing out the question. And then Minnesota educators come back together to review that data to see if the question performed as expected before it ever counts for a student score. So in many cases, especially in reading and science, approximately 3 to 4 committees of Minnesota teachers look at those test questions before they count for a student score.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one quick follow-up. And how frequently are those exams evaluated and maybe rewritten, or questions answered, questions which may, which your committee may consider problematic, eliminated, and new questions written? How frequently is that process done?
So we go through that process annually. We go through the, there are Minnesota educators that come together to look at all the new test content annually, and then we are also doing an in-depth analysis of the entire bank of questions before the administration.
Annually.
Annually.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Mohler, follow up.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you keep track of what other test districts offer? For example, I'm in the Mounds View School District, and they also offer the NWEA. Does MDE keep track of those other tests also?
Ms. Dugan.
Not in a database way. We might have that information if that was part of another plan. So if you were submitting a QCOMP plan or a district improvement plan, that information may be available in that way, but we're not collecting from our division, we're not collecting a detailed database of all of the assessments that are administered. I know that that was a part of what the OLA looked at back in 2016-17 as well.
One more follow-up?
Yep. Thanks, Madam Chair. And then also, the test results for the MCA, the parents and the schools get those fairly late. If you could talk about when those results are actually made available, please.
Ms. Dugan.
Within, the test results are available within an hour. State statute requires that the results are available within 3 days. We provide them currently within an hour because of the availability of the test. The districts have that information within an hour, and it is up to the district to communicate that information. They are able to print off of an individual student report to send home with parents that day if they so wish. It's up to the district how that information is communicated. Some districts do share the preliminary results. Some districts choose not to share the information until everything is finalized.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Representative Baker, Representative Erdahl, and Representative Oslowick, and then we're going to move to the rest of our bill agenda. Representative.
Madam Chair, Representative Mueller had my question, so we're all set. I'll pass. Thanks.
Wonderful. Thank you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Dugan, just wondering on the reporting of test scores, are all mandated state test scores made available to the public?
Ms. Dugan.
I will do my best to answer your question, but ask for clarification if I don't. So the state and federally required assessments, yes, are the results are posted to the Minnesota Data Center, Department of Education Data Center. There are suppression rules that are applied in order to protect student data privacy, and so within that realm, yes, everything that we are required to administer, those results are public as long as we're not disclosing an individual student's information.
Representative Erdahl, did that answer your question?
Close.
Follow up real quick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So obviously individual student scores aren't released publicly, correct?
Ms. Dugan?
Correct. The student's score is not released publicly.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. So is it like an aggregate score then?
Ms. Dugan.
It is summarized data, so you can select many filters within a given report. So you could look at how male students receiving special education services did, for example, within a certain state, within the statewide or the district or the school. And again, if the size of that population is small enough, then we would suppress that information.
Thank you. Representative Wasblick. Oh, did you?
Some may think I have an ulterior motive in this questioning, but I'll save it for another time.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Representative Wasblick, you have the final question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit. I stepped out of the room briefly, so I don't know if you talked about this at all, but how the educators who review the questions and the community members, how are those people are chosen to be a part of that process?
Ms. Tugan.
Thank you. So they indicate their interest to serve on that committee to us, and then based on a variety of factors, so for example, if we're pulling together a group of educators to look at math questions for grades 3 and 4, if that's one committee, then we are going into the database of educators that have indicated their interest in participating and looking for first currently active licensed 3rd and 4th grade math teachers, but also 3rd and 4th grade special education teachers and early and English learner teachers. And then we are looking at, within that subset, we're also looking for diversity within geographic representation, size of district, diversity amongst the from race and ethnicity and gender.
Representative Wasluck, great. Ms. Dugan, thank you so much. I know members, if you have further questions, I'm sure she'd be happy to meet with you. And I think we're going to move on to House File 3106. Representative Edelson. Representative Mueller, would you like to move House File 3106 before the committee?
So moved, Madam Chair.
We have House File 3106 before the committee with the intention of sending it to government operations because it is a task force. Welcome, Representative Edelson. Why don't you go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Heather Edelson. Know that. House File 3106 establishes a standard assessment task force, and I believe it's Madam Chair is going to be going to state GovOps.
Yes.
Okay. So members, I appreciate the presentation we just had because it lays the groundwork for some of the things that I've been hearing in my community. I have coming around to you right now the opt-outs that are from MDE's website, and I want to thank the department for getting me these numbers. But what you'll look at over the the span from 2013 to 2019, we've seen a steady increase in the number of opt-outs. Now, I'm not opposed to tests. I think tests play a very significant role in measuring whether or not students are meeting standards that we have set up in the state of Minnesota. However, when we see drastic numbers of students, the trend increasing, but the test not changing a great deal, it concerns not only my community, but many of the communities across the state of Minnesota. From greater Minnesota, I've spoken to some of the teachers there, to right here in the Minneapolis and St. Paul, to the suburbs. Members, in support of this legislation, this task force is the Principals Association, Schools for Equity in Education, MSBA, Ed Minnesota, AMSD. Really, you know, what we want to look at here is how there's increases in trends, but not only that, we look at reading has been pretty flat, math has actually seen a slide, and I don't know that the quality of education in Minnesota is going down, so I just wonder if, you know, we should really be looking at this test to see if the measurement is good. So I'd like to move straight to my testifier to really be able to expand on this issue, Dr. Stacy Lackner from Wayzata Public Schools.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record, and then please try to keep your comments brief as well.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Stacy Lackner. I'm the Director of Research and Evaluation for the Wayzata Public Schools. I'm here to testify in favor of the Standardized Assessment Task Force Health File 3106. I've worked in Minnesota public schools for 18 years as a school psychologist, outcomes manager, research analyst, and for the last 8 years as Director of Research and Evaluation for Wayzata Public Schools. My role as director includes coordinating all district and standardized assessments, training teachers and administrators how to interpret student test scores, and reporting school and district results. I support the establishment of a task force to review the current state testing system, as I believe several components of the system create an unnecessary burden on schools and districts and also provide information that does not align with the purpose of the tests and can lead to misunderstanding and misuse of results. One example is the requirement to include above and below grade level items on the MCA. The reading and math MCA tests each take 1 to 3 hours to complete. Including the additional items lengthens each test. These additional items are not used to determine the scaled score, student proficiency, or any other test results. They unnecessarily lengthen the tests. Another example is the inclusion of student strand performance on the MCA Individual Student Report, or ISR. The MCA is a unidimensional test that is not designed to be diagnostic at the individual level. Diagnostic information such as an individual student's MCA strand results are not reliable. MCA strand performance is only meaningful for groups of students. Including strand performance on individual student reports encourages misuse of the test results. In addition, the increasing number of parents opting their children out of the MCA test is becoming more and more of a challenge for schools. It not only impacts the interpretation of the results, but has implications for logistics as well. Schools must plan to test all of their students, which may include the need to hire additional staff to cover proctoring tasks. When parents and students opt out of testing close to the testing date, schools still need to cover the cost of the additional staff. The growing number of parents opting their children out indicates that the MCA tests are less and less valued by our parents. This needs to be considered for a successful testing system. The MCA tests were developed for a specific purpose, to measure the extent to which schools are teaching and students are mastering the state standards. They are a common measuring stick that allows schools to compare their performance with similar schools and to reflect on their own practice. Over the past few years, components have been added to state statute that require MCA tests to do things that they were not designed to do. Now they have been in place for a few years, the intended benefit of these additions may not have been realized, and they create additional burden for the system and cause confusion among school staff. I believe establishing an assessment task force to review our current state testing system and provide recommendations will lead to improvements that will benefit students, parents, teachers, and schools.
Thank you. Representative Allison, you have another testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair. I have the chair of the Edina School Board, Erica Allenberg.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank Madam Chairperson and committee members. My name is Erica Allenberg, and I'm currently the chair of the Edina School Board. I'm here representing myself as a board member, not the Edina School Board as a whole. I wanted to speak quickly about the proposed legislation to create a task force for state educational testing and go over some things that we've been seeing in the district of Edina. Three things I would like to quickly highlight are, in Edina in particular, the 11th grade science and also the math testing occur the same time as other high stakes testing, including the AP testing. There's a lot less incentive for high school students to participate and try on the MCA test than on those tests that affect students personally. Our district last year put an incentive program in place to give 11th grade science students the option of opting out of their final exam and using their MCA score as their final exam grade. In 1 year, our MCA science scores for 11th grade went from 70.6% proficiency to 92.8% proficiency. And interestingly enough, the score increase was even more profound for students of color. I'm also concerned from the high school testing perspective around math. Around 40% of the questions on the math test are about geometry and algebra. However, in Edina, as in many other school districts, students take math classes at different times. Testing on math concepts that many students have not studied for years is problematic to me. In Edina, we have students that start algebra as early as sixth grade, and in geometry, students start as early as seventh grade. I think it's also important to note that although there is not necessarily a data correlation between the MCA data and ACT data in respect that they are measuring different things, we continually see a wide variance between how our students perform on the ACT and how they perform on MCA testing, which brings me to the point about that we really need to test to see if the MCA is an actual reliable measurement and indicator for our school district. Because when I, as a school board member, look at school district metrics, my first question is this valid and does it provide actionable data for us as a school district? And given the results that we've seen from both the science test, clearly it's not measuring student performance in Edina very accurately, I think especially when you get older and into the high school area. So in conclusion, I just wanted to say that because of that, we've expanded the incentive program from science to other grades to see if we can get a more accurate representation of student performance than what the MCAs are indicating. So I just wanted to say it's important for us to continually assess what our state educational testing is measuring, whether it is accomplishing the goal of accurate measures, and whether or not the data is actionable for school districts. And I would welcome a task force dedicated to these topics. And I wanted to thank you for your service as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And then can the next testifiers state their name for the record and proceed?
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Dave Heisted. I'm the Executive Director for Research, Evaluation, Assessment in Bloomington Public Schools. And before that, I was in Minneapolis for 25 years. So I've been on all of the task force so far since 1987 that Ms. Dugan referenced. I am pleased that the purpose of this committee is to recommend changes to current assessment system to make assessments more meaningful, reliable, useful for schools and for students and families. And in my 25 years in Minneapolis schools and now for 8 years in Bloomington, I've helped develop local assessments, purchase assessments that met the standards for their purposes. So for accountability assessments, you need one set of standards. For assessments designed for instruction in the classroom, you need other kinds of aspects. And so I'm glad to consult on those issues and would be glad to serve on this committee if asked. It is very important that teachers, students, and parents are involved in the process for improving feedback on the current systems. And as mentioned, and as you have with your handout, the opt-outs from parents have increased like 44% in the last 3 years. The refusals by students have increased about 200%. And so with this kind of information, I feel that students may lack some motivation. As mentioned, the Edina School Board and the research committee piloted an incentive program to have students not have to take their final exam if they did well on the MCAs, and lo and behold, the science course shot up. So it sort of indicates that motivation may be a problem. These are the kinds of issues that we could discuss in a task force like this. And I believe the task force will provide value added to Minnesota education, which is already tops in the country. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Edelson, any further comments before we go to member questions?
Madam Chair, no, I'm ready for member questions.
Okay, Representative Moeller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Edelson, for bringing this bill. I think it's a really important bill, and I'm glad to see that we're having this discussion today. One of the things I hear about, and we're going to have a hearing about next week, too, is mental health issues for our students. And I would love to see one of the duties to also be considering how standardized tests impacts the mental health of our students, and possibly even expanding who's on your committee to look at that issue, whether we hear students themselves being participating in the committee and or psychologists, social workers. I know there are a number of organizations like that. But I think that's an important piece of the puzzle, and I'm hoping you would consider addressing that as well. Thank you.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Moeller, I think that's a fantastic idea. I would absolutely look at that. And Madam Chair, I was going to do an amendment to add someone from the business community as well, so I can absolutely make an amendment.
Representative Edelson, yep, you have another stop in GovUp, so that would definitely be the place to do it. I had a quick question, actually, for Ms. Allenberg from Edina. You had mentioned there was an incentive program to get kids to take the MCAs instead mm-hmm. of their final exam in science, and you saw the grades go up. Is that accurate?
We saw the proficiency level of the MCA go up. So because in Edina, students take biology in 11th grade, and that's when the MCA is. So the teachers were giving, and to the point of student stress, the teachers were giving both the final exam and the MCA around the same time, and a lot of the content was similar because you're testing the proficiency and the standards in biology. And so what they decided to do was if students tried on the MCA, and if they got a high enough score, then they could replace the MCA score with an A or B on their final exam, but it wasn't punitive in any way, so it didn't matter if you did not do well. And because of that, but like I said, we saw our proficiency go from around 70% to 93% when we gave students an incentive to actually try on the test.
So, Ms. Allenberg, that's telling me that the MCA was lower before because more kids were opting out, but because they were allowed to replace it with for the final exam, more people took it. Is that kind of what you took from that?
I think we don't have that many more opt-outs. I think students, quite frankly, don't try because, especially in 11th grade, we have a lot of AP exams at the same time. We have the MCA test at the same time. We have final exams around the same time, and a lot of students are still taking the ACT. And so the students know this doesn't count towards them personally. They know it's a school score. And I think many students basically go through the motions of doing the test as opposed to trying because it actually means something to themselves. So when we put that incentive in place, like this could mean something to you, our scores shot up, which begs the question to me, how accurate are any of the other tests that are being taken by Edina schools or other students around the state? Because to Heather's point, I think it's very important to have metrics that we can use and are actionable. But if you're having a 23% variance in how students are performing, it's hard to know, is this an accurate measurement or not? And that's my question all the time when I get our MCA scores. I'm like, is this accurate? Did students not try? Did students opt out? Mm-hmm. So I think it's lost some of, for me as a board member, it's lost some of the value mm-hmm. in trying to really utilize it to make changes at our school district.
Thank you. Representative Kuhnhagen, did you worry on the... Okay, Representative Waslewick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think kind of a few of you have touched on this, but I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about if you've had conversations with teachers and students, what sort of reasoning is behind their reason to opt out? We see the numbers here, but I'm wondering if you could speak to maybe what people are actually saying about why they're doing that.
Who would like to take that one?
In Bloomington, we've had over 1,000% increase in opt-outs. it's kind of exponential function. And the primary reasons deal with anxiety, test anxiety, special education students who don't feel it would be beneficial to them. There are also students who just refuse to take the test. And we didn't used to have that kind of a problem. I think 4 years ago we had 3 opt-outs. Now we had 130 opt-outs this last year. So there are many different reasons. Parents do, we ask them to put their reason on the form when they submit it, but we have to accept any parent opt-outs due to federal law.
Thank you, Representative Christensen.
I just wanted to add on to that.
Oh, sorry, Ms.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Ms. Allenberg.
That in Edina, we analyze the opt-outs to see if it's a certain segment of the student population. We've found that by far it's the highest achievers that are opting out of the test, which is suppressing test scores. And I don't know if they're seeing that in Bloomington as well.
In Minneapolis, as
Mr.
many.
Sorry.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Heistad. Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, in Minneapolis, as many as 2/3 of the students in a high school have opted out, and it tends to be the middle-class white parents more than students of color. And Minneapolis then has seen a huge decline in their percent proficiency because the high achieving students tend to opt out more often.
Thank you. Members, I've got Representative Christensen, Erickson, Kunish Bodine, and Mariani. And then we have 2 more bills on the agenda. And I know Representative Grunhagen's folks have traveled from a ways. So I think I'm going to bump him up after this one, Representative Edelson, then go to your second one. So members, if you could keep it brief, and testifiers, if you can keep your answers brief, it would be greatly appreciated. Representative Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There are a few teachers in here. I think every single one of us have heard from the kids when it's time for a task in the classroom or a test. Is this worth points? How many times have you heard that? Is this worth points? Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to look at, reflect upon the opt-outs in more than just one way. There's a lot more tests besides these MCA tests that they're taking care of. So they're saving their mental health. They're saving their energies. They're saving it, saying, this one isn't affecting my grades. It's not affecting, you know, it's not worth anything to me. So I'm not going to take it. So I think, I think we need to look at that, the fact that we're testing the heck out of kids every day in every classroom. It's not just in 11th grade at the end of the year. So I think we need to look at that. Second question?
Yes,
I mean. Yes, thank you. So I'm wondering, as you look at this program, if you're going to look at other test options other than the ACT.
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, I and Representative Christensen, the task force, absolutely. I mean, I want them to look at all different aspects of how we test. I mean, I've heard a lot of things about why the MCA is just about accountability, but I feel like everything we ask a student to do should also be for them too. Public education is about enriching kids, not just holding teachers accountable. I mean, I think that's not giving our teachers enough credit if that's all it's doing. So I think that this test can do multiple things, and I hope that we can get a group of people together to help us innovate this. So yes, my hope is yes, that we can look at all options.
Thank you, members. I remember we are on House File 3106 right now about the task force. I'm sure some of these questions may be better off with the next Representative Edelson's next bill, but did Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Representative Edelson, what do you think this task force can achieve that the 2 previous ones did not?
Representative Edelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I hope that we can see some traction because I'm looking at the numbers and the numbers continue to increase. So I don't 100%, I mean, I hope that we can get better buy-in. I like what our community did in terms of being creative. in terms of how do we possibly get buy-in from students. But we can't do nothing, with all due respect, because these numbers are increasing, and then we'd be ignoring a trend. So I do think that we need to keep revisiting it. If we were a company, we would not just ignore these numbers. These are our students, and I think that we need to pay attention to the trends that we're seeing increase.
Madam Chair. Representative Erickson, follow.
Thank you. Well, you know, I did the math, or we did the math, and 98% of the third graders in the state are taking the MCAs, and until we get to the junior year when it drops in math to 88%, that's still remarkable when it comes to testing. A federal requirement that we have adhered to at the state level. I think I'll leave it at that, Madam Chair, and just leave it there.
Thank you, Representative. Sorry. Representative Kunesh-Badin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for bringing this forward. As a teacher of 25 years and a testing coordinator for 10 years, at the elementary level, and then the last 4 years at the middle school, assisting with teaching or with testing. I've seen a lot of things happen both to the students and to the school in itself. And so a couple of suggestions I would like to see in this task force is I would like to hopefully you will look at the consequences of an overall well-rounded curriculum and what pieces of the curriculum have gone by the way because there's no time to do social studies anymore or art projects or field trips or that sort of thing. I would also like you to address not only the stress to the students but also to the teachers. There's a lot of pressure put on the teachers to make sure that these kids are ready for the test. And there's pre-test, post-test, all of those sort of things. And then, of course, the teachers are graded on how these students perform on a given day that could be, you know, hotter than Hades and nobody wants to do this anymore. And then just a couple other suggestions is I'm really curious, like at different schools or in school districts, which tests are they taking in addition to the MCAs? So are they taking three MAP tests and then the NWEA and then, you know, chapter curricular kind of tests? How much time and what tests are they taking? What is the schedule of those tests through the school year? And then I'd like to know the overall cost that not only to a school but to a school district and then a statewide cost that we are putting out there for testing and assessment. So those are some of my suggestions. I think we'd have some pretty interesting results. So thank you much.
Thank you, Representative Edelson. I believe that districts have to place their testing calendars on their website, so I know that information's out there. But Representative, did you want to respond real quickly? Okay, Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, and Representative Edelson and the testifiers, and I'll do this quickly, and I'll just ask them all in a row here. First of all, I think in terms of recommendations, I would encourage a group to look at career planning aspects of an instrument, and then also to look at immediacy and relevancy in terms of the use of an instrument. So here are my questions. First of all, are the MCAs being used by post-secondary for admission decisions to post-secondary? Two, are employers using the MCAs for employment decisions? Three, should there be a formative outcome for the MCA? Maybe the question is there a powerful formative outcome of the MCA relative to career planning and for on behalf of the student, but also for adjusting instruction on behalf of the instructor. And then my final question is, are we still restricted by federal accountability laws, so ESSA, to use a summative standardized comprehensive assessment tool as opposed to an alternative that would be formative in nature?
Who would like to take that?
Madam Chair and Representative Mariani, those are excellent questions. We'll be discussing a couple of these issues in the next bill. The MCA doesn't offer the kind of planning information that a test like an ACT would do, where it has career planning questions and has a lot more information that might be useful to teachers. Employers, I don't believe, use the MCA tests, and even though it was hoped that colleges and universities in the state would use the MCAs to determine placement, it really hasn't been used for that purpose. Most of the two-year colleges still use the ACCUPLACER, and most of the other colleges rely on the ACT. And then the laws have been changed under ESSA to allow for alternative assessments. I know New Hampshire is using a series of more formative assessments that are used for accountability, and two states have been approved to use the ACT in place of their state tests.
Thank you. Representative Murray, follow up?
Thank you.
Okay, members, I forgot to ask if there's any testimony from the audience. I see Mr. Heller standing there waiting. Is this actually the House File 3106? So, Mr. Heller, go ahead and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair, and members on the Education Policy Committee in the House. My name is Rick Keller, unofficial representative, twice exceptional print disabled, testifying today on March 3rd, 2020, regarding House File 3106. My suggestion, as Carlos has mentioned before, is summative informative. One is a can do independently, the other one is instructional. That's the difference, so people know they don't. The reason for that, what a person can know and do is independently. That's an independent thing. Maybe word recognition tests on reading with the MCA3s. However, the MIP test, the modified assessment, allows to read out loud. I provided three handouts to three different representatives here, a large school district that was cited with over 20 students that were taking the wrong assessments this year. How many parents know they have a standard-based IEP? Getting back to the bill, my suggestion is if you're going to put a working group together, have it audited about how many special ed kids and 504 students are taking the wrong assessments. It's a standard-based IEP or a modified IEP. That's all it is now. I think it's very relevant as we move ahead about what kids know and can do independently on a piece of paper. Obviously, it's not necessarily what you can know and do on a piece of paper for memory recall. It's actually what you can do on hands in the workplace, as Carlos mentioned, career college-bound students. Because the shift has gone from the Higher Education Opportunity Act of 2008 on federal funding to the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act of 2014. It is career-oriented now, work-related. And as we know, about 3 years ago, the legislature allowed flexibility for students that are in school setting, 11th, 12th graders, correct me if I'm wrong, if I speak, because if I ask the chair, someone to yield to the question, they won't usually respond.
Mr. Heller, we're on the task force bill, and we still have two other bills up, so could you, was there a question that you had, or?
The last piece of this is apply universal design principles. Minnesota is the only place in the country, there's a clearinghouse called the National Center of Education Outcomes. They're making recommendations as relates to assessments. They have not been included specifically, and we and the State Department has a partnership with them. Again, that's the only clearinghouse for assessments. Thank you for the job.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Members, any further questions? Representative Edelson, final comments.
Madam Chair, members, I realize that we've done a task force. We've looked at it. The Office of the Legislative Auditor looked at this in 2017. But I think that a test like this that we put so much stakes on, that we really hope to like look to, that we look at it and we continuously look at it. And I think that is part of the job of the state of Minnesota. So I ask for your support.
Thank you. The chair renews the motion that House File 3106 be referred to the Government Operations Committee. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion prevails. House File 3106 is re-referred to the Government Operations Committee. Representative Grunhagen, I wanted to get you forward since you had some test fires that came from over an hour away. So we have House File 1964 before us, and the intention is to have this go to the General Registry. Representative Grunhagen, would you like to move your bill?
Chair, your team, yes, I would move HF 1964 to be placed in the General Register.
Thank you, members. House File 1964 is before the committee. Representative Grunhagen, go ahead and proceed.
Chair, your team, I do have an amendment, technical one, just changing some dates, if I could move that first.
Yes, members, you have the A1, got the wrong bill up, that's fine. Member, Representative Grunhagen moves the A1 amendment before us to make some changes on the date. Any discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A1 amendment say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? A1 amendment has been adopted. Representative Grunhagen, proceed.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing this bill. This bill has to do with PSEO and some accountability for students who are struggling with their post-secondary option and some accountability back to the host school. With that, I have Counseling Secretary Cheryl Templin here to make comments and give a few examples of how this bill would help students that find themselves in a difficult situation in terms of attendance and passing their PSEO course.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Cheryl Templin. I brought just a few examples of some of the years in the past and some of the students that we have struggled with. It comes down to graduation, and a lot of the credits transfer back to required courses that are needed for graduation. If they're electives, it's not as detrimental, but when it's a required course, the transfers back for graduation credits. And we don't find out that a student failed or withdrew a course until a few days before commencement. There's no way that they can do a night school, a summer school, that type of stuff. And right now, we currently do not get notified by the secondary school that, or the post-secondary school, of a student withdrawing or failing from a class until we get the actual transcript. So a few examples that I have of some students. I did have a student in 13-14, was enrolled in 5 PSEO courses, withdrew from 3, failed 2, so got no credit received at all. Another one was enrolled in 4 PSEO courses, withdrew from 1, failed from 1. We didn't know about any of this until we got the final transcript January for the fall semester, or spring, May for the spring semester. So those are just some of the examples. And a lot of students, I don't think they look at the repercussions it can cause for the future. If you get grades like this, you're probably on probation. When you do finally graduate and get your diploma and go on to school, you're on probation right away. And so they don't think about that, or you're not accepted into a college at all because of the issues that were caused at the high school level.
Thank you, Ms. Magnuson. Did the other testifier want to state their name for the record and proceed, or are you just...
She's here for support.
Okay. Thank you. Brevity is always brevity is always appreciated in this committee. So is there any testifiers in the audience, briefly? Member questions?
Perfect bill.
Yeah, I did. Representative Erdahl, I heard you. I did say brevity and Grunhagen in the same sentence. Yes, I did. And it's greatly appreciated. Representative Grunhagen, I think you have a winner here. Would you like to do some brief closing statements?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Yeah, I think this is about students and trying to help them if they're finding themselves failing or not completing the course. And the sooner the whole school that sent them to post-secondary finds out, the better we can help them. And I think
That's what we're all about. So I would encourage support by the members and appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. And by the way, if you're wondering if I really was on the school board for 16 years, these ladies can verify that.
Okay. Representative Grunhagen renews the motion that House File 1964 as amended be placed on the general registry. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The motion prevails. House File 1964 as amendment is recommended for placement on the general registry.
Thank you,
Representative Grunhagen. Members, we now have, we revert back to our schedule. Get organized here. We'll have House File 3107 before us. And I'm watching the clock here, and I want to give time for member discussion. So we will be going a little bit over, but not more than 4:15. So hopefully you can, Representative Adelson, can you make sure that your testifiers only take about 2 minutes each? And Representative Adelson, I will move House File 3107 before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then I also would like to move the, the A1 amendment.
Representative Adelson has an A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape that the author would like. Representative Adelson, would you briefly explain your A1 amendment?
Madam Chair, this just puts a little bit of this is a pilot, and so we just wanted to put in a report in a time that this would go for.
Right, great. The chair moves the House A1 amendment to House File 3107. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, the A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Adelson, would you go and proceed with your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This House File 3107 would allow the Innovation Zone schools. I have a handout with all the innovation schools here listed, so I'll send it around. I don't know where the page is. It would allow the Innovation Zone schools, we have seven of them in the state of Minnesota, to pilot using the ACT in place of the MCA. An alignment study was done to see if the ACT aligns with the MCA, and I'll let Dr. Heista talk a little bit more about that. But other states, ESSA, the federal plan allows us, like other states are doing, allows us with federal approval to use the SAT or the ACT. Other states that are doing this are Montana, Nebraska, Kentucky, Louisiana. There's numerous states. I think that there's like 12 to 15 now that are doing this. So, Madam Chair, in terms of time, respecting members' times, I'm going to move straight to my testifiers and let them talk about this bill.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Dave Heisted, Executive Director for Research and Evaluation in Bloomington. I'm here to testify in favor of House File 3107. I was just informed by College Board Member Todd Iverson that's here that there are 14 states already who have approved either the SAT or the ACT as an option. In all of those states, districts are given the option to either give the state test or the ACT. In Bloomington, we have already conducted an alignment study between the ACT and MCA standards, the Minnesota standards for reading and for math. We had 10 experts from around the state meet. We had a company, ACS Ventures, that conducted the alignment study, and they found substantial alignment in both reading and math. We also have 3,000 students who have taken the MCA and the ACT already in Bloomington. We've offered it since 2014 and paid for it for all students. And so we were able to do a correlation, a statistical correlation, and found that the correlation in math was about 0.9, which is extremely high. Typically, the standard for assessments being equivalent is 0.7. And so we also, with the help of the Minnesota Department of Education, will be submitting evidence to the federal government. They have a very extensive peer review process, and we need to show that accommodations are in place and that the test items aren't biased. The ACT has done extensive bias review. They have Each item on all of the assessments that ACT gives are independently reviewed by 16 different independent reviews to make sure the content is not biased, and various groups of communities of color sit on those task forces. Also, they do statistical analysis to make sure none of the items are differentially predictive for white students over students of color. I think Jennifer Dugan mentioned that MCA does the same thing. And so if you find an item that's biased, you throw it out, and then you don't score the test with those items. So I think that's my brief testimony for right now. We do have extensive information from ACT about accommodations. I know that has been a concern. There are accommodations not only for special ed students, but for EL students, and also with students on a 504 plan. One of the accommodations is that if approved, you can get extra time up to 1.5 times the normal time of the test. So I'll pass it to my other testifiers.
Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Stephanie Levine, and I'm pleased to testify in favor of HF 3107. I serve on the ISD 197 school board. I'm also speaking on behalf of the Association of Metropolitan School Districts and the Minnesota School Boards Association. In addition, I served on the MDE's ESSA Assessment Committee, as well as the High School Nationally Recognized Assessment Work Group, which came up with a roadmap for testing reform. But there can't be innovation without permission by you, the legislature, which is why I'm here. The need for testing reform at the high school level is one of near universal agreement. It's not just the state of Minnesota either. About half of the states have gotten out of the testing business and now take advantage of ESSA's flexibility to use a nationally recognized assessment, including most recently our neighbors, Wisconsin and North Dakota. During the ESSA listening sessions around Minnesota, as well as the OLA's report, that message was clear. To that end, MDE put together committees and work groups that brought together multiple voices, perspectives, and professionals from across our state. And for that, I'd like to acknowledge Ms. Dugan, who ran those groups. We spent hundreds of hours devoted to the creation of a roadmap for reform. With passage of this bill, we have an opportunity to see if reform is possible. Bloomington's plan is the route most Minnesotans agree on, using the ACT for accountability at the high school level rather than the MCAs. Why does this make sense? First of all, the current system is broken, and here's why. MCAs test schools, not individual students, and scores aren't released until after the school year ends. That's the final score, not the preliminary score. MCA testing in the spring uses precious classroom time that would otherwise be devoted to exams that matter, those which benefit students directly through college credit, access to higher learning, jobs, and scholarships. At the same time, state law allows students to opt out of taking the MCAs. Students opting out are counted as not proficient for accountability purposes, which leaves a distorted picture of school accountability. How are we going to get the support of our community when our proficiency numbers are artificially low? Each year we ignore this problem, our accountability system produces more and more inaccurate numbers. I've heard it said that teachers and parents aren't doing their best to promote the MCAs. Well, I challenge any teacher or parent to convince a high schooler that MCAs are worth their time. Kids are smart. They know when something doesn't make sense, and they communicate. In my case, when my daughter was in 11th grade, she asked the morning of the MCAs if she could opt out. I had not discussed this with her, and I asked her where she heard that term and why she wanted to opt out. "Well, Mom," she answered, "it's all over social media, and my friends in other schools are opting out." Well, my answer was the one no parent likes to give, but the only one I had, which was, "You'll do it because I said so." Well, for those of you who are parents of teens, you can guess the uphill battle that we have as parents and teachers face to get kids to take this seriously. Make no mistake, the opt-out movement and the practice of not taking the MCA seriously will continue, and in doing so will invalidate the very reason they exist by providing proficiency data that is completely meaningless. So if we want to measure proficiency, using the ACT makes sense. First of all, the ACT is already being taken by thousands of 11th graders.
Ms. Spearman, I'm sorry, we have a lot of other testifiers, so could you please wrap it up?
Okay. Preparing for and taking the ACT is a positive act. Some critics of the ACT say that giving it to all students sends the message that all students should be college-bound? Well, that's simply not true. We believe in students' choice, and we support many careers that don't involve a four-year college degree. But no student should be limited to their future plans because they didn't have the opportunity to take the ACT in high school. It's an equity issue, too, and for that reason, many schools like ours pay for and give all their juniors the ACT. Students don't opt out of it, and they do take it seriously. You know, there's so much in education that reasonable people can disagree on, but honestly, this issue brings people together. When I brought this proposal up at the MSBA's Delegate Assembly in December, where school boards from across the state of Minnesota, rural, urban, large and small, voted on the resolutions that will be in our platform, this was one of only two resolutions to get unanimous support. We need to do right by our students and schools by taking steps to reform a broken system.
Ms. Bierman, thank you for mentioning students. We do have two here, so I'm going to move to their testimony. Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Elliot Berman.
Linda Nyakundi.
Hello, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for allowing us to be here today. We are currently juniors at Hopkins High School and are here to provide a student's perspective of what changing the MCA to an ACT would mean for us and a majority, if not all, of our peers. As of right now, there's absolutely zero reason for myself to take the MCA. As students, we do not know what these tests are for, what they determine about our futures, or the future of the school. The most common reason for tests that we hear through word of mouth is allocating of school budgets. However, teachers regularly dismiss those thoughts, saying scores have no direct impact on how much the school receives from the state in aid. For those reasons, there are absolutely no visible benefits for students to take or try on MCAs. Students choose to opt out of these tests to study for more important exams as AP exams due to the time frame in which they are administered. Replacing MCAs with an ACT changes the game. Students know that a good ACT score can make or break their future goals if said student plans on applying to a college. An ACT would not only provide students a benefit for taking the test to the best of their ability, but also provides more accurate results for the state itself to determine whether schools and districts are or are not meeting the necessary marks.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Ms. Nyakundi, state your name for the record again, and please proceed.
I'm Linda Nyakundi. Another important factor to consider is the part that these specific standardized tests play on a socially economic scale. Allowing for multiple opportunities to take the ACT through the school would also help close several inequality gaps found in the state. Low-income students would be allowed multiple chances, much like higher-income students, to take the test and improve their scores. Some students have taken the test up to five times over the 2 years, and as we know, not every family has the ability to afford these tests, seeing as the ACT costs roughly around $46 per test and about $63 with writing. ACT knows that there is a social economic problem when it comes to their test. In a 2016 report about multi-testers, ACT stated the percentages of single testers in family income ranges below $36,000 and were higher than those of repeat testers. This is a huge disadvantage to students that can't afford to take the test more than once. In the same report, ACT states that repeat testers' latest scores have an average composite score 2.9 points higher than their single test counterparts. This creates a larger inequality gap within our state and across the country. With the success of this pilot project, not only do those students no longer have to worry about finding the money to take the test, but now they no longer have to worry about taking time out of their days and pushing aside other responsibilities in order to take it. By allowing several chances for students to take the test multiple times, you will be doing your part in closing those inequality gaps. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nyakundi. I believe there are some other testifiers that have signed up to testify. So we'll have them come down, and then these testifiers can stick around just in case there's questions. But please be brief, just 2 minutes each. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jake Langamo. First off, I would just like to say it's an honor to be here today. I'm a government teacher at Gibbon, Fairfax, and Winthrop schools. It's actually in Representative Grunhagen's district, and I had the honor to meet with him today, too, and that was exciting. So it's exciting to be part of the process. It was a powerful incentive for me to come here and to practice what I preach to my class. I want them to get involved. Thus, I sit here and I talk about incentives in the MCA test. We all, as educators, understand the needs for tests. The tests hold schools accountable, they show areas for growth, and they meet federal requirements. I do not disagree with these goals, but they are not obvious to my students. Consider the last time you were a student. In college, you remember finals week, the stress of needing to do well to get that degree. The incentive is clear. Now imagine if your finals only measured the effectiveness of your institution. You may see the need for finals to evaluate the school, but your incentive is weak to do your best. And this is a high school student's relationship with the MCA. Last week, I was in training for the MCA test. We were exploring how the test looks from a student perspective. We were unfamiliar with the online tests, the layouts, the program. It was demoralizing for us to navigate, and we knew the answers. I can only imagine how weak incentives pair with student frustration, and this can lead to mediocre test scores. I cannot really blame students for struggling to see the importance. One student told me they tried at first, and then they just wanted, because they wanted the school to do well. But then they just started clicking through. I even caught a group of students trying to race through the test without reading the questions. They wanted to compete for the fastest time. This is not the type of data I can use for my instructional decisions. I'd like to contrast this with the ACT. Students treat the ACT with the same level of care and passion that many college students treat their finals. Students study for the ACT, and the students try on their ACT. In conclusion, I would just like to consider the goals of the MCA. First, they hold institutions accountable. The ACT could give a real picture because it gets the students' best effort. The MCA gets best effort from fewer high school students. Second, it could show areas for growth. If students are just clicking through the test, I don't have any real data to inform my decisions. Finally, it could meet federal constraints. The MCA jumps through that hoop, but education is not about jumping through hoops. It's about helping students. That should be our incentive. And on the tests that gauge the effectiveness of our schools, I believe students need an incentive too. And the ACT could do that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Langham. Why don't we have Ms. Wallstein and Mr. Krausen come down together, and each of you just state your name for the record, and have Ms. Wallstein up first, and then proceed.
Hi, my name is Amy Wallstein. I'm the Education Policy and Workforce Development Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership. I want to make a few comments on House File 3107. In the interest of time, I combine my comments with House File 3106. The overarching education and workforce goal of the business community is that Minnesota continues to have a well-prepared workforce. Minnesota's reliable, well-educated, and well-trained workforce has been our competitive advantage for generations. And as the workforce changes due to demographic shifts and job growth that is outpacing the supply of workers, as well as the nature of work changing due to technology and the fourth industrial revolution, employers are more engaged than ever before in developing the next generation for future success. And to prepare students for success, we need to define and measure success. No one likes tests, I certainly didn't, but evaluations are necessary to measure learning, growth, and mastery. And the role of the MCA is to measure student learning relative to Minnesota's college and career readiness standards. And the MCAs are a summative assessment that are designed to measure whether schools are teaching to standards. Over 15 years ago, Minnesota developed some of the nation's best college and career readiness standards. And we're now embarking on the process to review those academic standards. And as future readiness has evolved over the past decade, our standards and assessments that measure them may also need to evolve. This conversation about what future ready means should involve a diverse array of Minnesota educators, Minnesota families, as well as the training managers and hiring managers from the Minnesota business community. My emphasis on Minnesota is intentional because I think a key policy question for this committee is whether we want to depart from Minnesota-driven assessments that we can and certainly should work to improve. The MCAs don't neatly align with some of the student growth measurements that are being used by classroom teachers. The information from the MCAs may come too late, and we may need to be looking for additional measures or tools that can demonstrate future readiness in the changing economy. This is a big conversation and one that can be initiated with the standards process and the assessment working group that Representative Edelson proposes. But at this time, before we really dug in to fix the state tests, we've got concerns with embarking down the path of using national tests that aren't necessarily designed to Minnesota standards and were not developed as a summative assessment for accountability. Representative Mariani asked the question of whether the business community, whether employers use MCAs. No, they don't look at MCAs, but they don't look at ACTs either. They look at skills and abilities, degrees, and certifications. And I think that's something to keep in mind as we have this evolving conversation on what future ready means. So as this moves forward, we'd like to focus attention on how Minnesota can take a systemic approach to gathering data on future readiness that meets accountability requirements, aligns to state standards and is most usable for districts and teachers. So thank you, Representative Adelson, for bringing this conversation forward and for your thoughtfulness in looking for solutions. We look forward to continuing the conversation and support the concept of a working group, and we ask for consideration of a seat at that table. Thank you.
Mr. Croson, state your name for the record and proceed.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Joshua Croson, and I'm with Ed Allies, which is an education advocacy group dedicated to improving outcomes for all of our kids in the state of Minnesota. With some of the worst academic outcomes for students of color, Native American students in the country, Minnesota needs to transform how we do public education, which is why strategies like innovation zones are so important to this conversation. That said, we also need to know that our innovations are working. We need to be able to measure our improvements, and I believe that HF 3107 does not allow us to do that. HF 3107 would allow high schools and innovation zones to be able to choose their accountability assessments based on nationally normed tests. We can safely assume that that nationally normed test we're talking about today is the ACT. When testing our students as a state, we have to determine what the goals of those tests are. I believe those goals should be, one, to provide all students and their families with accurate information on how well they're learning and growing based on Minnesota-adopted academic standards. Two, give community members a clear and comparable idea about how schools are doing. And three, measure the effectiveness of our education system, changes to it, and any other variables that go into student learning. I believe HF 3107 runs counter to all three of those goals. First, in providing all students and their families with accurate information, as you can see from the handout that I just provided, through the independent study conducted by Achieve, the ACT falls well below our state-adopted academic standards, yet still manages to prevent students from meeting their proficiency benchmarks, especially students of color. Also, because the test is timed and there are not alternative assessments, students with disabilities won't have access to the ACT in the same way they have access to our state-adopted assessments. Second, in giving the community a clear and comparable framework, allowing some schools to adopt the ACT and others to adopt the MCA would not give the public a clear understanding of how our kids are doing throughout the state. The multiple assessments out there are not comparable, nor are they designed for the same goals in mind. And third, in measuring the effectiveness of our education system, because the ACT is not aligned to our state assessments, understanding how well kids are growing from grades 3 through 8 will not be measurable and comparable to high school student achievement. How will we know if the innovation zones and other changes to our education system are working if we neither have a clear measurement that is aligned to our state standards nor a test that allows us to compare across different systems? Lastly, I ask the committee to be careful. States throughout the country have tried to do this, tried to do what's being proposed today, and the U.S. Department of Education is meeting the requests with denials and strict scrutiny. Our ESSA requirements are pretty clear that HF 3107 will likely be illegal. Be careful not to turn our high schools into ACT preparation centers. We know that the ACT can be gamed, which is why test preparation is a $1.1 billion industry and why the ACT and SAT are changed so frequently. It would be better for our students to be assessed on the standards that they learn throughout their schooling rather than their ability to complete an ACT preparation program. Thank you, Madam Chair, and with that, I'll leave room for questions.
Thank you. Representative Adelson, did you have some comments? I know Bloomington did an alignment study. I don't know if you want to mention that. Then we're going to go to quick member questions. Members, I did want to get this bill out today. We wanted to be done by 4:15. We'll have to keep looking at the time. Dr. Heistad, can you be very brief?
Yes, Madam Chair and committee members. We did an extensive alignment study. ACS Ventures does this for their business. We found that 100% of the items on the ACT reading aligned with state standards, and we found that 93% of the math items aligned with state standards. We have had a review by Michael Rodriguez from the University of Minnesota, who also indicates that this is strong measurement of our state standards. Thank you.
Thank you. Moving to member questions, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a question for Ms. Dugan from the department.
Ms. Dugan? Thank you.
Ms. Dugan, I know that we had a testing reduction advisory group that met a few years ago, and in reading a recommendation about administering a college entrance exam At that time, they said the ACT did not have the same accessibility requirements as the state of Minnesota has, and that there was not alignment between the ACT and the MCAs. Has that changed?
Ms. Dugan.
Thank you. That's not my area of expertise, and I have not examined done a side-by-side comparison of all of the accessibility features that are, and accessibility features that are available to special education students and just ease of access that are available to all students. I have not done a side-by-side comparison since that report was published.
Thank you, Representative Harrison.
Thank you.
Follow up? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe my question is for Mr. Crossan. And maybe for the business community, I don't know. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crossan, I've been hearing rumors, and I don't know if they're substantiated or not, but perhaps you know that colleges and universities are even moving away from accepting the ACT and the SAT as like their sole determiner of whether they admit students or not, and I'm wondering if you know anything about that subject.
Mr. Crossan.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative, that is the trend that's going on nationally. We're starting to see that the benchmarks for the ACT, students who meet those benchmarks have a 22% chance of going into a remediation course. So the remediation rate for kids who, quote-unquote, pass the ACT is 22%. The remediation rate for, or I should say, sorry, is 25%. The remediation rate for Minnesota students is about 22%. So the remediation for Minnesota students and students who aren't ready based on ACT proficiency is about the same. Colleges and universities are recognizing that and are moving away from these nationally normed assessments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Scott, follow up?
Yeah, Madam Chair, my reason for pointing that out is that do we really want to be using a benchmark like the ACT if colleges and universities are even moving away from that? And my other concern is that it doesn't appear that that the ACT matches with the state standards, which is a requirement by law, I believe. So I think this needs a whole lot more investigation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Adelson.
Madam Chair, there was an alignment study that was done, and it was an independent study that was just completed about a month ago. So the alignment, we can happy to have MDE review that and get a copy to all the members. But Dr. Heistad did speak to that. And then, Dr. Heistad, do you want to speak to what was just said?
Dr. Heistad, really briefly, because I have one more member question.
It is true that universities use more variables to determine whether a student is eligible for their colleges. GPA is by far the biggest predictor of college success. So many colleges are putting more weight on GPA than any standardized test. What was commented about the MCA and ACT is a fallacious analysis. The ACT benchmarks are much higher than the MCA proficiency standards, so they would cut off different. If you look at the MCA test as equivalent to the ACT, which it is, the same numbers of students would be proficient with either measure, and that's where we do what's called an alignment and equating study, and we can say that, you know, with high confidence that if a student gets an ACT score of 20 on the math, that's equivalent to proficient on the MCA math.
Thank you. Representative Mueller? Oh. Members, any further question? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would request that Dr. Heistad share that alignment study with the department and that we receive an opinion from the department as to whether that alignment is accurate with regard to their standards.
Representative Erickson, I think that is a wonderful idea, and I believe I heard Representative Edelson say this. Members, this bill is going to education finance. I think it still has a lot of work to do. I think Representative Edelson realizes that. So Representative Edelson, final words, and then we're going to move to a vote.
And Madam Chair, I just want to also correct one thing. The ACT does actually make accommodations with students with disabilities. So I want to clarify on that as well. I think that, you know, a test can highlight inequities, but a test cannot fix them. And so we have innovation zone schools, so we can pilot things just like we're talking about today. So I ask for member support.
Members, I will renew my motion that House File 3107 moves to education finance as amended. Any more further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion prevails. House File 3107 is amended as we refer to Education Finance Division. Members, I want to thank you so much for hanging with us today. I promise tomorrow we will end on time. We are meeting at a regular time tomorrow and look forward to it. Meeting adjourned.